Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is your moment. Your time to shine. Your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody. How are you doing this fine afternoon or evening or morning, whenever you're listening to this? Hopefully it's morning, because this episode, I am throwing fire, absolute fire. This is a white whale episode. I am so excited to tell you that John K. Samson from the Weaker Thans is on this very episode. He's one of my favorite musicians, probably of all time. The Weaker Thans are top 10 favorite band. I just can't tell you how much this pleases me that I got to speak to him, because, like, you know, you try not to, like, put these people on pedestals, because they're just, like, they're normal human beings, especially when you're talking about in the context of independent music, right? But there are certain people where you're just like, wow, like, they're a real human. Like, and that's what John K. Samson just, like, showed me during this conversation. But more on him in a moment. Let me talk to you about the other things that I'm excited about. One is a new sponsor, which I am so excited about. You've heard me talk about them before, most specifically on last week's episode with Matt Pryor and Radar State. The label, Wiretap Records. I love them so much. Rob is a friend of mine and he does a great job. But what I want to tell you about is he does something super, super cool called the Wiretap Record Club. Now, let me play you just a little quick sizzle reel. You know, that's what we in the industry call, like, you know, like, get you excited. So I'm going to play that right now. These are basically all of his recent releases and you can kind of get a little sampling. Okay, so that is what he is putting out, and his record club. Basically, let me break this down for you. It's $125. There is limited to 50 total, and you'll get every release they press on vinyl in 2019. So it's a minimum of 10 LPs. Guaranteed test press from this year's catalog, an exclusive T-shirt, an enamel pin, all digital downloads, member discounts, and more. So you can go to wiretaprecords.com and check out what they have to offer. That's super cheap. For 10 LPs and a t-shirt and a pin, like basically it is your vote for independent music to be like, you know what? I support what you do and I trust what the label has going on. He sent me a bunch of their releases and frankly, there's no dud in there. So Wiretap Records, check out their record club. It's amazing. But there's a $15 discount to listeners of this show. Use the code 100WORDS upon checkout and you will get $15 off. Okay. So basically it's $110 for a boatload of music. Okay. Thank you very much, Wiretap, and check out their stuff. I also have to tell you about rockabilia.com. PC Jabberjaw is the code that will give you 10% off all the band merch that you can possibly buy from their website. I love what they do. They offer amazing, high quality stuff that is all licensed officially from the band. So you're not going to be supporting bootleggers and or just get terrible shirts, you know, because like you've gotten those ones before where you're like, oh, wow, this is great. And it's like some iron on transfer and then like one wash, it's done. No, that does not happen. I've ordered multiple shirts from them and they are a spectacular company. So PC Jabberjaw will get you 10% off. Thank you, Rockabilia, for your continued support of this show. Before I talk about John K. Samson, holy moly, I have been so stressed. Like I have never felt stress from my work, really, frankly, ever. I've just been fortunate enough where, I mean, like you feel stressful moments and stressful times when you're like leading up to, you know, I was working at the record label. I remember an incredibly stressful time when, you know, like bands from Germany were coming over to tour and I was making sure that all of the, you know, van rentals and details were all settled and stuff. And there were some stressful times there. And maybe I just, you know, you have a good, we as humans have a good way of forgetting those stressful moments. But like I'm sitting in a stressful moment right now. And man, it sucks. It really does suck. Like, you know, heart palpitations. Like I haven't gone to full blown panic attacks, which is good because I've had, you know, friends around me and other people to kind of balance me out. But yeah, I just want you to know that if you're feeling that stress for whatever it is that you're going through, I'm there right there with you. And just put your head down. You will be able to get through it. I assure you, you've been through more difficult things in the past. I know I have. It's like my wife survived cancer. And I was right there with her as she was getting chemotherapy and all these horrible, horrible things. And I was able to walk along with her on that. And that was brutal to watch. So what's some work stress, right? Okay. But I just want you to know that you are not alone. I'm feeling you. So 100wordspodcast@gmail.com if you want to reach out and you know, commiserate. Be like, yeah, I'm going through a stressful time too. But let's talk about John K. Samson. Like I said, this guy looms so large in my life because, I mean, I love Propagandhi. Love the Weaker Thans. And I just think what he has done, he's been able to carve out his own life with being a creative person, with creating incredible music, incredible lyrics. I could go on for hours and hours how much I respect the art that he puts out there and how much I love him. And I honestly chased this interview for about, I want to say going on 2 years. And I have to give a very, very large thank you to Chris Hanna from Propagandhi, who is a previous guest on this show, who connected me with John. And I'm thankful for that. So here is my discussion with John K. Samson. Holy crap, I can't believe I'm saying that. Month's rent is scheming with the damage deposit. Take this moment to decide. If we meant it, if we tried. Propagandhi was a huge band for me. I'm 38 years old. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you guys put out those records right in the prime time of me getting into, you know, a lot of punk and hardcore and stuff like that. But then I also loved, you know, when you put out the Weaker Thans record on, you know, G7 and Fallow and started to play shows around that. Like I saw you play at Coos Cafe in Santa Ana here in, gosh, I don't know, it was like 97, 98, maybe something like that.
Yeah, I remember that show. That was really fun. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. And it was funny because that was kind of the first time I really recognized the idea of someone expecting something out of an artist and them not delivering the thing that they expected, you know? So it's like, clearly people are like, oh yeah, John from Propagandhi. So here's his, you know, quiet side project or whatever.
But
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
So I presume that when you first started to kind of do that and people were, you know, clearly attaching you to your previous work, was that kind of a weird vibe where it was like, oh yeah, I'm not going to play shredding punk anymore. Like, this is what I got.
Right. I suppose so. I think, yeah, it was definitely a case of not meeting a certain segment of the people who showed up's expectations. But there was also something beautiful about that I enjoyed. And this was before kind of music was as kind of saturated in the culture as it is now. So you would kind of come to see a band, as you'll recall, to hear the band, not to hear them play the songs that you already knew, right? So there was something kind of exciting about that as well. I can never overstate how grateful I am to have been in Propagandhi and have had that kind of launching pad for the rest of my life as a writer.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, I think it's funny because, you know, most, even at this time, you know, whatever, we're, you know, 25 years removed from that, but people will, right, you know, always link you to that, even though, you know, you've clearly carved out your own niche. But I think it's...
No, absolutely. And I think, like, the fact is that those records will have sold more than all of my other work combined in the end. So, and that's an interesting kind of fact to me, and something that I think about and respect, and is that, you know, some people will come expecting something else, and yeah, sometimes that was difficult. Like there were certainly times when it flared in kind of unpleasant ways, where, you know, like, I don't know, like, people would throw things at me, or kind of, like, you know, there were some terrible moments, but, you know, for the most part, the punk scene was pretty open to what I was doing, and pretty generous with their acceptance and kind of engagement with my work after being in Propagandhi. Yeah.
And I think too, because it wasn't like you as a person all of a sudden started to, like, you know, wear cowboy boots and, like, put on a costume and, like, right, not talk about politics. Like, you just were you, sure, except in a different vehicle, you know?
Well, and for me, it was always like, there's a pretty obvious through line in the few songs that I sang lead with Propagandhi. Those songs are kind of still the kind of model. I mean, the first Week of Ends record was not very far from my previous work, right? So I didn't see it as such a leap, really.
Right.
But you never do, right? From the center, from the center of it, you can't really see the margins, I guess. Yeah,
for sure. In just having this little discussion, it just reminded me too, I remember seeing, kind of, you know, on the flip side, where you you know, I saw you play at the Troubadour, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, you Dashboard Confessional was opening up for you, and this is like,
right,
and I just remember that.
Yeah,
was,
that's right.
Right,
I forgot about that trip. Yeah,
and it was so interesting because you had these two completely separate crowds. You had your, you know, people, yeah, who were completely tapped into the mainstream coming to watch Chris Carrabba play, and then people, yeah, you know, sort of curiously sticking around, where it's like, hey, who's this dude headlining? And then kind of being like, oh, yeah, interesting. I remember that experience too.
That was really, yeah, that was strange, and that was that was fun, kind of fun too. Like, it was like trying to hold the attention of those people who were just there to see Chris was an interesting challenge, for sure. I ended up in that position a few times. Arcade Fire opened for the Weaker Thans once. Just as the show was booked before their first record kind of became massive, and then we had already booked the show. I think it was in the Pacific Northwest somewhere, and so that was like, I was like, oh my god, like the you know, Arcade Fire is opening for us for some reason. So and there was no way to hold that. I mean, it was interesting. Anyway,
right.
It's always like the industry. Yeah, the way the industry moves is so. It's yeah, you can't really plan it.
No. Yeah, it's like the best laid plans all of a sudden are just like, oh
sure,
wow.
Sure.
I gotta follow this now? Oh, okay.
And I like that feeling too. Like I also like you know, the whole I always loved playing during Propaganda days at Gilman Street in the East Bay there. Because they had this payment system where it was weighted towards whoever drove the farthest, right? So it was like if you were the biggest band on the bill, but you were from, you know, like Portland, and another band was from New York, you know, that played first, the New York band would get more money. And I always thought that. If I had my way, that's how the world would work. It was kind of beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. It's very egalitarian, where it's like, yeah, you just drove the farthest, so practically speaking.
Yeah.
Practically speaking. Yeah. So, you know, kind of shifting the focus towards you as a person, you know, a private person in the sense of, you know, you're not, you know, publishing stuff on social media and talking about your narrative and doing all the things that people do on social media. But, were you actually born and raised in Winnipeg?
I was, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Tried and true.
So I've been here all my 45 years and
And what was your family structure like as you were growing up? Like mom and dad in the house? Do you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah. My parents were in the house and my sister. And I grew up in an excellent home, and I was in children's choirs, which was sort of my first exposure to music, I guess. And I was raised in a kind of high Lutheran church that had a sung liturgy, so it was kind of this kind of form of talk singing that I feel like was pretty. I can kind of trace back to my talk singing now. is that kind of early exposure to music? So yeah, and then children's choirs was my kind of first exposure to music,
Got it. And so what was your what was the trade that your family was in? Like, you know, what did your mom and dad do for work as you were growing up in the house?
My dad's a lawyer and my mom's a teacher.
Oh, okay. Very tried and true, you know, very quintessential jobs.
Yes, it's true.
What did your mom teach?
She taught elementary school.
Oh, nice. Did you have her as a teacher?
I did not, no.
Okay. It's funny because I definitely think I come from a family of teachers as well. And I think there's always that notion of like, no, I would never want my mom as a teacher. Like I, you know, but then some other kids are like, oh, that'd be cool if like my mom or dad was like, you know, working at the school or whatever. And then it's like, I don't know that.
Did you ever encounter that?
I did not have my mom. She actually sent, you know, she taught at public school and she sent me to private school because she was like,
interesting.
I just wanted small class sizes for you. And so I was like, okay, fair enough.
That's lovely.
Fair enough. Sure. What sort of law did your dad practice?
You know, I'm not sure.
Okay. Fair enough.
I'm not totally sure actually. He was, I think, in contract law, I believe.
Sure. So like, did he have his own practice, or was he like working within the context of a company that he was their go-to guy?
Yeah, he was a partner in a law firm here in Winnipeg.
Nice. And are you the older sibling or the younger sibling?
I'm the older. Yes.
So you're the you're the trailblazer.
I suppose that's true. Yeah.
And I mean, I think most people that kind of think of Winnipeg, you know, view it as this, weather stripped city that, you know, obviously has some culture, but you know, in many, many respects, it's been a town that often gets overlooked when you're talking about Canada. Cause most people like in America reference just the coast.
Sure.
But you know, what was your experience as you were, you know, growing up in Winnipeg? Was it just like, okay, I got to play hockey and that's pretty much it? Or what did you feel?
Right. I was a curling kid myself. So okay. I curled from an early age and I still curl. So that's kind of the other, I think kind of more, has more purchase as in my mind as like the national sport in that, everyone can play it in a way. Like it's sort of, I like the kind of democratic aspects of it. I was certainly a hockey kid as well growing up, but I never really played. And I was, obsessed by the NHL. But kind of, that kind of, dissipated sort of in my teens for sure. And Winnipeg is like it's a geographically quite marginalized place. Like it's quite far from any other city. So I think over the years it's had to kind of invent its own culture in a way. And the weather has a lot to do with that culture as well. So I feel like people here sort of have to entertain each other and ourselves, and so I feel like there's a real kind of tradition of bands, especially basically as something to do when you can't spend a lot of time outside.
Yeah. I don't know why I always kind of drew the parallels between Winnipeg and something like Iceland. I mean, obviously Iceland is even more removed geographically, but it definitely resides in that same sort of, pride about the city and
Cause my father's family is Icelandic and Winnipeg and Manitoba is the biggest population of Icelanders outside of Iceland. Weirdly enough, they started immigrating in, late 1800s. And my grandfather was printed the local one of the two local Icelandic newspapers here, weirdly enough. But I find that there's a really interesting, you're right, I think the Icelandic culture is similar in that sense that it had to invent itself in a way, and I still feel like Winnipeg is like that in a lot of ways, just because even, with the internet and with the more kind of, with the spread of culture being kind of more democratic and available, the physical isolation is still there. Like it still exists, right? It's
right.
Just a fact.
Right. Yeah.
So, So it was an interesting place it is an interesting place, I think, to come from. And it's a place that, I think I discovered fairly early on was what I wanted to write about and what I wanted to try and understand is this place, because it sort of has everything that I'm looking for as a writer. It bothers me. It delights me. It's got kind of a, it's a small town, it's also a city. It's unjust and strange.
Yeah.
And so, I feel like it's something I'm still trying to get right and something that I'm grateful for.
Yeah. Well, I think I always personally, and I know a lot of other people identified with that notion as well, just because, you know, most people, like, you know, whatever, my experience of living in Southern California and living, you know, in Orange County, which is, you know, white, suburban, very, you know, well off, hearing other people's experiences, you know, broadened my horizon in general, and then understood that it's like, oh, like, you know, not only, you know, is a band like, you know, Propaganda and Weaker Than speaking about, you know, Winnipeg and politics and everything else. It's just like, oh, this is something I didn't even consider. And it, you know, I need a person to deliver it to me in song in order to like put it in context where it's like, oh yes, this is something I should care about. Yeah.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/ray.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah. No, I mean, that's kind of what my favorite, you know, music does, I guess, and art in general.
Yeah.
For sure. And it's certainly what, when I first heard Propaganda, I was like, I had that reaction where I was like, kind of broke my mind a little bit, recognizing that someone was writing about place that I'm from,
right?
And yeah, that's kind of
what you're chasing.
That's important.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
the idea, I mean, this is me sort of projecting upon you just in the times that I've watched you play and, you know, what I kind of know about you as a quote unquote public figure. But you are, you know, you're a pretty reserved dude. You're definitely not the sort of guy that, you know, I would probably define as, you know, the life of the party, kicking the doors open and being like, everybody pay attention to me. Was that kind of always who you were as far as like, you know, the quiet natured and, you know, a more, I guess, introspective, thoughtful person? Or was that something that you kind of, I don't know, not tried on, but was that something that has always been kind of consistent?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. That's just part of who I am. I'm pretty private and I certainly wouldn't, I know that I wouldn't be a songwriter if I was starting today, just because the kind of dire publicness of it for me would just be, there would be no way I would run from that. I would run from the contemporary music industry, even in its, I think in its wonderful independent forms, it just wouldn't be for me. Yeah, and I mean, part of it is also, you know, mental illness, which is something that I struggle with, like a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. So it's certainly not good for that for me. The publicness of that kind of lens is I've discovered, though I kind of always knew, is not conducive to me being healthy.
Right.
So that's, you know, that's something that I struggle with, and I think a lot of musicians and artists struggle with now. So yeah, it's a curious place for me to be, in a way. And the punk scene was great for me because it accepted that, in a way. It was really, at the time, I don't know what it's like now, but it was very democratic and it was welcoming to me, at least. So yeah, it was kind of, I feel like there's still, you know, the track of my career kind of veered off from that ethos in some ways. And that was probably a mistake in some ways, that I'm trying to circle back to that generous democratic spirit mm-hmm. in music. So lately I've been doing house concert tours.
Right.
And I love how much they remind me of basement shows that I would be a part of in the 90s. And just that kind of element of it. So I'm a lot more comfortable in those settings and yeah, I mean, yeah, I never really became entirely comfortable with with performance in a lot of ways. Though I guess, you know, in the beginning I felt like I loved the travel and didn't like the shows. Shows kind of terrified me in that, but the travel was great, and I would go for walks in every city that Propagandhi went to. I would go on these massive walks and I would love that. And now I'm sort of at the point where I actually love the shows and I don't really like the travel. Mm-hmm. So it's this kind of weird
it's weird flip.
Weird kind of flip, yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I mean, I really like those thoughts that you're you know, being able to articulate, because I do think the you know, as people, just because, you know, essentially punk and hardcore has existed for so long now, to where, you know, it's impacted people that are, you know, 30 years younger than us and, you know, whatever, arguably 10 to 20 years older than us. So now you have people that are doing things that are not really technically related to that DIY culture, but are still, like you said, you know, no one, I would challenge anybody to obviously look at the, you know, what you have done musically, career wise and everything, and not be able to find the obvious through line of like, well, yeah, essentially you're still just, you know, the DIY, like, you know, punk and hardcore kid, even though, you know, you wouldn't self-describe as that, but the notion is, you know?
Yeah, no, that's, and that's still what I think of myself as. I know that it's pretty hard to see from an outsider. I'm sure, and especially someone who didn't have the context of being part of a punk scene. But yeah, I do feel like its template is still kind of on everything. On everything that I do.
No, it's great. It's great. And as you, I guess what was the kind of, you know, because clearly it's not like the idea of, you know, you joining Propagandhi and you guys, you know, playing out and touring and stuff like that. Like, you know, that wasn't the quote unquote business plan, as it were. So like, you know, what was the, I guess, the supposed path for you as you were going through school? Like, you know, did you like school? Like, what were you, you know, were you, I guess, kind of growing up to be like, oh yeah, I'm going to be a lawyer like my dad or whatever. What was the path?
No, I hated school, and I'm still bitter about it.
I love that.
I feel like it's not good. So I hated school. I found it profoundly unpleasant, and there was almost nothing good about it for me, at least. But I was more. I read books, which I feel like kind of was my one saving, not one saving thing, but it was kind of my comfort was books more than music, actually. So I did buy a bass. I worked like a part-time job or during the summer. When I was 15, I think, painting boards, and I bought a bass. I played guitar sort of really badly before that, and I recognized that that no band was going to have me really as a guitar player. So I thought a bass would be I would be able to play music with other people, and I was. So I was in a band in high school, and. And so that was it wasn't particularly punk, I don't think. We were sort of more indie rock kids. Mm-hmm. We were into the Replacements and the Pixies and stuff like that. But I was obsessed with this writer named Kurt Vonnegut, and he's this really wonderful novelist and writer, and he's really political. Like he's kind of a wonderful leftist humanist writer. And so I felt like when I heard Propagandhi for the first time, I heard those politics. And to me, I think before that, music had been strictly sort of an emotional outlet. And then when I heard Chris and Jord, I was like, this is you know, twinning those two things together,
right?
In a profound way, in a way that I was just like, this is amazing. So and then I just was in the right place at the right time. I saw a poster they put at the local skateboard shop, and I think I'd met them before, and so, you know, I think about it now, and they were sort of the first punk band I heard, so it's kind of weird that was sort of my
your intro and your first
intro
real band. Yeah.
Happens to be this really incredible band, I thought, and so. Yeah, I don't think anyone else tried out. I was like, you know, I was like, and I'm not I was not then and am not now a good bass player. I cannot be called a good bass player.
Right. You're proficient.
I'm proficient enough. I'm learning. My wife, Christine Fellows, is putting out a record this month, and I'll be touring in her band and playing bass. And I picked it up the other day, and I was like, oh, wow, I had no idea what I was doing. Because I was like, you know, but there was the part of the generosity and openness of the music itself was that was kind of cool. Like I could fit into it. I could play the root notes and jump up and down and kind of get by in a way. So,
yeah.
So that's really, you know, and I guess I was also really, impressed by, how melodic Chris and Jord were. Like they are, you know, the way they sang together on those early cassette tapes that I heard, I was like, wow, singing, like they're singing together in harmony. And that really kind of appealed to me in a big way. I was like, that's really exciting. And, so yeah, it was a total fluke. So yeah. And I think that's kind of how, when I heard them, I was like, I want to write songs too. I had written songs before, but I'd never really kind of aspired to too much before that. So yeah, they're still kind of like the biggest, probably. Yeah, they are the biggest influence on my writing. Christine, my wife, and those guys.
Yeah, no,
that's, for sure.
That's,
you know,
that's incredible. Well, yeah, because yeah, that opportunity gave you the voice to be able to be like, oh yeah, like they can do it. Like I can do something
yeah,
similar. And that,
in
the same way that, you know, you're always going to view yourself as a punk and a hardcore kid. And it's like, it's not like you had to ask permission to write these songs. You just started to do it because you saw your friends doing it. It's like, oh yeah, I'll try this out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So then, you know, as things started to, you know, get more serious with, you know, Propagandhi and like, you know, touring and, you know, the fact that it's like, oh, like we're, you know, we get paid money and you could even, you know, argue, well, not argue, you can even point out the fact, like clearly, you know, the Weaker Thans existed in the music industry as well by putting out records and touring and all that other stuff. You know, how the business of the bands that you've been in, has that been something that you've had to, I know you kind of alluded to it earlier where you're like, you're always continually grappling with that, but like, did you enjoy the business aspect or was that just something you're like, God, I wish I could ignore it completely and just play music?
Yeah. I can't say I enjoy it that much. I mean, I'm interested in it in a kind of theoretical way. I'm interested in bands and musicians who try and do things slightly, even slightly differently is exciting to me, you know, like, so yeah. And I like the ethos of kind of democracy, which has been in all the bands that I've been lucky enough to be in, you know? So I liked, yeah, I remember the early Propagandhi days were when there was this zine called Book Your Own Fucking Life.
Oh, yeah.
That had, you're probably familiar with, you know, it had, like, people's addresses and phone numbers for shows all over North America. And, yeah, those tours were kind of incredible and frightening and weird and fun. And then, yeah, when it got kind of more established, yeah, it was fine. It's not really something that, yeah, I kind of, about a year or two into the Weaker Thans, I kind of let go of all of that. And Steven, our guitar player, took over and did most of that. And in a lot of ways I felt like a failure because I couldn't keep my mind on it. It just wasn't something that I was that interested in, and it didn't move me at all, the industry side of it. So,
yeah.
So I sort of wandered off. But I mean, we did set kind of like, I think, progressive work practices where we could, you know, like, we try and pay everyone exactly the same. And you know, it's, so there's some kind of, you know, we were like, I think of us as like, you know, socialists, and we wanted to kind of be that in practice. So, and that's always been something that I've recognized as great. And yeah, and the labels I've worked with have all been based on relationship, not really based on career.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So like, yeah, I think it's a pretty huge fluke that I'm on Epitaph Records, and I'm really grateful to be, you know, like, it's a total, like, I don't know how that came about, but I'm really glad that it did.
And right.
I just really like them all. They're really, like, they work really hard on my behalf, and yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so, I think it's, no.
Whereas I don't think I, like, I've been in the kind of unique position of I've never really looked for a label. It's sort of,
it's just been there. Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think to your point, I think that's, you know, how, you know, good partnerships exist creatively, where it's like, you know, if a person is interested in the business aspect of the band while also obviously wanting to be creative musically, it's like that they all serve the same purpose, and like, they'll be able to, you know, like, it'd be a different story if they're, you know, you played with a person who is like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to, you know, get signed to Capitol Records and like, let's put out, you know, let's be as big as the Foo Fighters or something. Then that would be in stark contrast to what your goal is. But, you know, if it's
totally
simple and you're on the same page, you're just like, oh yeah, you handle that. I don't want to touch that.
Yeah. And I like that that's kind of more and more, well, and the democratization of the means of production the internet has afforded us all is like some pretty cool things about that. Like, there's like, you know, people can put out their own records and, you know, like, and that's wonderful, and make their own records. Like, when I started, it was still like raising money to go into a recording studio. Like, that's, you know, and it was a lot of money. So, you know, like, that's kind of we're in a new world. Like, you know, like, probably my favorite record of the last while is Frank Ocean's Blonde. And that's an independent record. Like, it's kind of amazing when you think about it. Like, it's, you know, like, he put that record out himself. There's no, you know, I don't know. There's something, like, when I think about that, I'm like, wow, that's
You're like,
incredible.
This can happen on a whole much larger level.
On a massive scale. Yeah.
Totally.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it is beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, something that I've noticed throughout, you know, people asking you questions over the past, you know, 15 years is, you know, everyone always comes to that fork in the road where they're just like, it must have been so weird that you left Propagandhi. Like, you left this successful band, you know, I'm putting on a cheesy reporter voice or whatever. But, you know, like, the way that I, like, you know, viewed it, and I think most people probably viewed it, where it's just like, you know, whatever, you're in your early 20s and you're just like, like, I want to explore this thing. And like, it's not like some, you know, really like calculated decision to be like, it was a decision based on the fact that you were like, yeah, I want to leave the band because I want to do this other stuff, as opposed to like this huge thing that, you know, that, like, that, I don't know, that it seems very funny that people project that on you.
Sure. No, it's true. I mean, they got tons better after I left, right? Like, they're, I think, you know, with Todd and the extra guitar players, who are both incredible, I think it ended up being best for them and best for me. I don't even think of it that much.
Yeah.
Really, I can't really remember. You know, it's weird. Like, it's sort of dim. Like, I'm not. Sometimes you just have to recognize that things worked out. You know, like, it, and not worry too much about why they worked out. You know.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. I just it's just so funny because it seems like such a decision that it's like most people are confronted with that, where it's just like, you know, even if it's right. like, hey, do you want to still play in a band, or like, do you want to like, you know, get a degree? And some people are just like, oh yeah, I guess I got to get a degree. It's the same thing where it's just like, do you want to play in this, or sure. do you want to do this? You're like, well, I kind of want to do this. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, those kind of massive decisions in your life that seem massive at the time are, you know, often when you look back, they're just sort of, they're not even choices.
Right. Yeah, they're just there. It's just going to happen.
Things that happened, right? Yeah.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Kind of focusing on your time in the Weaker Thans, where because like you said, sort of skewing much of the conventions of the fact that you are successful and people recognize the band and you can play shows and all that sort of stuff, that you probably at the beginning are just like, wow, I can't even believe this is happening. But the band arguably reached some pretty high highs as far as like shows you were playing and the interest that the band garnished. I guess kind of and this is kind of putting you on the spot, but I think you probably have some tangible moments of like, as you were starting to kind of get out there and put out records and do all that stuff, when did I guess things feel like, oh my gosh, like I this is weird, I can't believe I'm here doing this, whether it's like a it doesn't have to be a specific show or anything like that, but just that feeling of like, wow, when we put out Left and Leaving, I can't believe this happened, or whatever,
I don't know if I ever felt that way. I think it was sort of a gradual thing. And my anxiety with crowds and a lot of things was such where I don't feel like I ever really enjoyed that much.
Sure.
I didn't get a lot of joy out of it in a weird way. Like it sounds like harsh to say, but I never had those moments where you're like, oh, this, I'm doing what I want to do in the world. I'm still not sure what I want to do in the world, but I feel like, I'm obviously super lucky. There was, I can't really pinpoint a moment. I know when I felt bad.
On the flip side, like, when did it feel, too overwhelming for you?
Yeah, and maybe that's lame of me to kind of like.
No, it's okay. That's the truth.
Point out
though.
The negative, but yeah, it's kind of the truth. Yeah, was when it sort of. I feel like there's a certain point with me that if the audience is too big, like the fuses blow in a way. Like, so it's like I just shut down, and it's like. It's not something, it's a job, it's something that I don't enjoy anymore. So there's this weird point where I'm like, oh, this is, having said that, like, when I'm actually doing it, when I'm actually playing the songs in front of people, I did love it. But it was like every other moment around that, you know, like every second around that, like, that sometimes felt kind of terrible. So, I learned to love playing, but I also just had a lot of trouble with other stuff. So, yeah. So that it was you know, difficult and kind of untenable after a while. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, I think to that same notion or that idea that, like, even, you know, when you are experiencing these things that, you know, most people look at as being like, wow, it's amazing. You can play in front of, you know, 1500 people and like have everybody, you know, like, you know, eating from the palm of your hand because of the way you're crafted your lyrics or whatever, you know? You know, to your point, that clouds the vision because it's like, you're just focused on that, you know, whatever, 45 minutes to an hour and a half stage time. And then, like, the moment that you leave it, it's like, oh, here's where all the stuff I don't like comes into play.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I love the feeling of a room where it's like 200 people and there's kind of an interaction, even if it's not kind of verbal, you can kind of, it feels like a collaboration. In a way, like, it's the audience and the musicians are doing something together to make something ephemeral that is just for that moment, and that to me is really beautiful. And I can't summon it, or it doesn't work for me a lot of the time when it's anything larger than that. Does that sound? I don't know.
Yeah. No,
so yeah, it
makes
kinda,
sense,
and it's just specific too. It's
right.
Just, me, like, it's not, I'm not saying that it's right or wrong, or it's just, you know, I've learned through my cognitive behavioral therapy that you can't pretend to feel something you don't feel.
No.
And vice versa.
Right, right. And like, there's only so long that you can stuff that feeling away before it starts to manifest itself in different ways. And all of a sudden, you know, the sort of, you know, quiet, easygoing guy, John, is like snapping at people and they're like, what the hell is happening? It's like, what? This is a weird vibe. He's never done this before.
For sure.
And so, you know, something else that, you know, I saw sort of traditionally speaking in regards to the way that people have approached, you know, speaking to you and interview wise and stuff is that, you know, I mean, most people are always like, oh, John Samson, like, you know, just doesn't like to do press. So, like, you know, again, I'm using a hyperbolic voice here, but like, doesn't like to do press. So, like, you know, it goes through these things where it's just like, oh yeah, you can interview me by postcard, or like, you know, you can, you can't reach out to me on social media. So, like, you know, you can't email me or whatever. But the, you know, I've always viewed it where it's like there are certain people that are willing to put themselves out there and doing that on a regular basis. And there are people who are like, well, I'm willing to do that for people who actually have a vested interest in the thing rather than like, here's, you know, my name on the list of 30 things they got to do today. Is that kind of accurate, that sort of description, rather than like, oh, John's just a, you know, an asshole. He doesn't want to do press or whatever.
Yeah. Well, part of it is I'm an asshole. But
okay, fair enough.
But, I mean, I think probably a little bit. But, you know, it sounds dumb, but, like, sometimes I'm just like, you know, like, I think Neil Young said it, or someone like that. Like, when people were interviewing about his songs, he was like, well, the songs are the songs. Like,
it's right there.
Like, that's what I want to put out into the world. There they are. Like, you know, that's my job. And I feel like that as a cultural worker. Like, I make songs, and if, you know, that, it's not my job to talk about those songs. I don't feel like, I feel like, you know, the songs are supposed to do something in the world. But I can also totally understand why that's not exactly right. And again, it's totally specific to me. Like, mm-hmm. I don't feel like I should say, you know, everyone should be, you know, leave social media and never do interviews and all that stuff. But I do also feel like I've taken up I've taken up some space in the culture. It's not a huge space, but there's other people to speak to that I think are more interesting and more timely, frankly. So that's also something that I've thought about. I remember in the early days of the Weaker Lens, we always said that when we quit, we would invite other bands to quit with us, to break up with us. So we would do like a mass breakup.
Sure.
So
it would be, I love that.
So it would be like, you know, like 100 bands break up on one day and you know, loosen up the soil for some new bands, you know? Like, I feel like, yeah, there's a lot of great, great work out there. So I'm also like, hey, like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's something that I've, you know, reflected on myself, like not only, you know, interviewing people, but to being the subject of interviews and like just kind of seeing how that, mm-hmm. that sort of like give and take relationship happens, where it's like, I think like, I remember I approached Sam McPheeters, the singer of Born Against.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Who's sure. like, you know, is a notorious curmudgeon. Like, that dude is, you know, like tried and true. And so I was like, okay, mm-hmm. I'm scared, but I'm going to try to approach him. So like, you know, you had to write a letter to his PO box here in Southern California, and like, you know, I was like, okay, he's never going to respond to me, but like, you know, he emailed me back and was like, yeah, I'd love to talk. And I think it's one of those things where not too dissimilar to, you know, how we're speaking, where it's just like, when you actually show the person that you actually have a vested interest in their art and are interested in them as a human, most people will be like,
yeah.
Oh yeah, like, that's fine. So like, I get that.
Where it's more like it's a conversation, it's not a transaction, right?
Right.
Like, yeah. That's my problem with social media, is that it feels so transactional to me, so capitalist in its nature. This idea of quantifying everything with you know, numbers, basically, of grading things. So to me, I'm like, yeah, like, you can't, conversation, like real conversation and communication that's not how it works, right? So I agree. Like, I'm totally interested. I love talking to people, but I don't always think that it's useful for me to do it when I have to talk about myself all the time, or like, I don't know. Yeah.
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 I understand that, because especially too, it's like, once you've existed for, you know, whatever, let's say over 10 years in a particular music scene, you've discussed a lot of stuff already. You know, most people know the broad strokes of who people are. Like, you know, if someone's coming into you and is like, oh, so where are you from? It's like, dude, are you kidding me? Like, you don't know that I'm from Winnipeg? Like, this is ridiculous. But like, but that idea of just like, yeah, you want to be, like you said, it's not just this transactional thing. It's like, this thing will hopefully create value and, you know, maybe be inspirational to a person being like, oh, like, now I know that artist a little bit more. And in turn, it will challenge me to, you know, make my own art, or like, be more committed to the band, or whatever, you know, whatever the function is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Imparting the fact that ethos that I think I kind of emerged as a writer with, is that if you if you want to write, you can, you know, and you should.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and kind of, and having, yeah, so that's kind of.
Right. That's what, yeah, you want to put out there where it's just like, yeah, you know, I'm some dumb tum from the middle of Canada writing some stuff. It's like, you could do that too, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. No, totally. Yeah. Yeah.
This is something I've noticed in myself. Like, I'm 38 years old, and the older I get, I think, and I've noticed this across, you know, other peers and friends, and people get really attached to the idea of communities. I mean, communities are an important part of any culture, but like, I think people that get exposed to subcultures, that becomes even more important as you get older, just because, you know, you have to be more deliberate with your time due to, you know, familial obligations, professional work, whatever. But it seems like you've expressed that pretty continually for, you know, a while. I mean, 10 plus years, you've always been really focused on that sort of communal aspect, not only in your shows, but, you know, the activities that you do, you know, from the writing that you do to, you know, working, you know, with the local library and all that sort of stuff. This is kind of a simple question, but like, you know, when did that kind of interest start? Or was that something that you had always kind of like, as you started to, you know, go to punk and hardcore shows where you realized that was a community, has that always kind of been part of your purview?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. Yeah, I do think that it's increased in its importance in my life as I've gotten older, for sure. And I have community here that I'm enormously grateful for, and it's not really music community, though I'm in a couple choirs, so it's a different kind of community than punk scene, you know. But yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure. I think I was always looking for it, and I didn't always find it. And I think the trap of being from a small town, or being from this small town, is that that kind of feeling that life is elsewhere, that everything is happening somewhere else, right? And that's I think a huge kind of problem that people now wrestle with as avatars on the internet, is this fear of missing out, right? This kind of like, life is always somewhere else. So I guess I've discovered it in my own community, in my own city, and that's been really helpful for me, it's there, right? It's there.
Right.
And it's available. And a lot of it has to do with sitting in circles with people. Like I help run a book club at the prison here in Winnipeg, and you sit in a circle, and I'm a member of the Quaker community here in Winnipeg, and you sit in a circle, and you know, I've been in group therapy, and you sit in a circle. I'm interested in that. That's kind of, and you know, choir, you sit with people who you don't, you wouldn't otherwise sit with, right? And that's the kind of community that I'm most interested in now.
No, I really think that's you distilled that very appropriately, because I think that especially with the notion that you always feel like things are happening outside of what is immediately visible to you. You know, it's like, oh yeah, that you know, city over, or like that. Oh, because I'm not on tour, I'm not feeling like I'm doing anything or whatever. But like, like you said, there's so much that is easily touchable, you know, within a 5-minute radius of your house, and you just need to put yourself there in order to feel it.
And that's also what was, I think, one of the dangers for me of being a touring musician, was this, like, this fantasy world. I mean, it wasn't great or anything, but like the unrealness of the world, where you know this, you go on tour and then you come home and you're like, well, you know, I have to do things for myself. You know, I have to, it's this weird, and for me, I was always like, I think my entire 20s, I was thinking, well, I don't really have to have to commit to anything here because I'll be going on tour again in 6 weeks, right? So that was, I think, very dangerous for me and very kind of unhelpful. So yeah, recognizing that it was here all along, you know, I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah. And I think too, something that I think is valuable to people who have come up in the subculture that we have, once you interact with people who, you know, frankly have no clue or just don't care about, you know, whatever punk, hardcore, whatever you want to call it, but they see the, I guess the, you know, immovable passion that we have towards it, they, you know, become a little interested in the, like, oh, like, it's not like they'll ever like the music per se, but they'll, you know, understand that sort of like DIY notion of like, oh yeah, like, you know, why did you start a band? Just because I did, I picked up the bass and that's what I did. And you're just like, oh, I guess you can do that. And you can start to give people that notion that they can pick up and do whatever it is that they want without asking permission.
Right.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing that, you know, sometimes people like, you know, not everybody has the, you know, the lucky experience that we have of, you know, tripping across, you know, records and all of a sudden being immersed in this world that is like,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
You're hanging out with adults and it's like, what? This is, why are you're 16 years old. Why are you hanging out with a 24-year-old? It's like, well, they're just the same. They're at the same show. It's fine.
Yeah. No, it's true.
Two last things I want to hit on before I let you go, was the, you know, the fact that, you were able to kind of, you know, confront your, you know, your shortcomings as far as your mental illness was concerned, and the fact that you wanted to, you know, get help and disconnect from the fact like, hey, I can't be touring, you know, 250 days out of the year, and I can't I can't exist in this rat race that sometimes people feel like they get on. Once you kind of, I guess, shifted your focus away from that, you know, did you feel that sense of people being like, oh, great, like, now we're not going to get more music from this guy? And like, you know, that feeling of kind of, I don't want to say like arrogance in a way, but just like, oh dude, like, come on, you've got, you're living the dream, bro. Like, why can't you get your shit together or whatever? You know, did you kind of, I mean, not like see that per se, cause one, I guess, is going to come up to you and say that, but
no,
you know.
Well, my output has always been so slow. Like, you know, I've only written like less than 100 songs, or no, probably a little more, but like, you know, I've been writing since I'm 16 and I'm 45 now. I write like 3 songs a year, and that's like a good year. So I've never felt like, I've always felt like people who like my music kind of understand that and accept that, that it's, you know, it's not the center of my life. I don't think it should be. Like, I feel like it's the product of the life I live instead of the other way around. So I feel like, yeah, I've never really felt like that overwhelming pressure. Like, you probably know the feeling, like, it's like every time I write a song, I think, oh, I'll never be able to do that again. Or like,
right,
every time I think I'm gonna, like, I think about writing a song, I'm like, I don't even know how you do that. Like I'm looking at my bookshelf right now, and I have Songwriting for Dummies on the bottom shelf of one of my, that I actually went out and bought one time. I was like, you know, like, how do you do this? So, you know, I feel like, yeah, that's never been, I've never felt a lot of pressure in that way.
That's good. Yeah. I love that visual of you going into a, you know, a bookstore and being like, hey guys, I've written like 150 songs, but I just ran into a wall. I can't write anymore. Do you got a book for that? Yeah. Here, try this out, John.
It's kind of helpful, actually. It's not a bad book. I've read a couple of them, and they're kind of like, there's some good ones. And you know, like, some of my favorite things I've done as work has been to run songwriting workshops where you hear what other people do and you kind of craft songs in a circle. I think that it's really powerful to like share your work with others, and in that delicate kind of frightening process of making something, being open to that experience has been really helpful for me too.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. I just love the repeated pattern of like, you know, doing things in a circle. Cause yeah, it's like when you, it's so true. Like you boil it down to simplest of terms and it's like people getting in a circle talking about stuff. Like that is sometimes some of the coolest things that can happen to you in your life where you're unlocking some, you know, part of your brain because someone said something in a circle.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I do feel like that.
And so I said two last things, but I'm going to squeeze one more in here. I apologize. But since you've ostensibly, you know, been able to, you know, make a living as a, you know, a musician and artist, is that like something you actually write on your customs form as you're traveling where it's like you write a musician?
Yeah, I guess I do for my visa into the United States because that's what it's based on.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
But otherwise, yeah, I guess that is. You know what? I finally feel kind of comfortable with that.
Right.
I would always write something else, like, you know, until like the last 5 years where I'm like, I put musician or I put writer, and I'm like, oh wow, that's kind of is what I am.
Right. Yeah.
So,
you've grown comfortable.
Yeah, so I'm sort of more comfortable with that now. I'm owning that now.
Yeah, good. Which you know, because most people, especially just because, as we were discussing earlier, you know, your business acumen is not something that you are is not something you are proud of.
No, it's very poor. Yeah,
but the you know, the fact that you've been able to do it is pretty cool, because obviously most people, like, especially, again, in the subculture we exist in, everyone like looks at, you know, Fugazi as the like untouchable. It's like, oh dude, if every band could be like Fugazi and charge $5 at the door and not sell merch. And it's like,
right.
You know, ideally that would be rad, but not everybody can.
I know. Yeah, it's true, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And it's a total fluke. But like, you know, when people ask me advice on industry stuff, it's like, I have no idea. Like, I have no idea how, like, the series of events that led me to here are, you know, pretty much based on chance. So it's kind of, I can't really tell anyone how to do it. So yeah, it's 'cause I know so many amazing songwriters and musicians who can't make a living. You know, like some of my all-time favorites cannot make a living just doing music. So, you know, that has to do with the injustices of capitalism. So it's like, it's a much bigger thing than trying to navigate through the music industry. So, it's a weird world.
Yeah, no, totally. There's really no, there's no blueprint that people can look at. Like, no matter what road you've taken, it's like, no, you're like, I could tell you the 400 mistakes I did that could lead me to here, but that's the best.
Exactly.
That's the best I could do.
Yeah. And I like that idea of like, I feel real solidarity with other musicians. And I like that now. Like, I feel like, that we're workers, right? And that we have to think of ourselves as workers. And look out for each other as workers. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah. This is a,
you know, I think that sometimes that's not a thing in the cult. Like,
yeah,
like,
you're right.
You know, artists are this kind of separate thing who do this mysterious work, and that's not so. Like, it's labor, and it should be respected as labor. So yeah.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, It's a craft in the same way that, you know, like, hammering a steel anvil. I mean, hammering a steel anvil takes, you know, arguably more skill than writing a song. But, you know, writing a song is also pretty difficult, too.
Well, yeah, and I don't want to compare my...
No.
My work to someone who actually works hard.
who does something useful and not just writing crappy acoustic songs out there.
Yeah.
the last thing is that, you know, you, because you've existed in a, you know, very, you know, left-wing socialist political world, and that's been your political beliefs ever since you have been able to express that in all the bands that you've played in. But, you know, by nature, you being a more, you know, quiet and reserved person, there, you know, a lot of times people see those political beliefs and are just like, oh yeah, like this dude is going to be in my face about all this stuff and is like going to, you know, yell at me and everything like that. You know, but clearly, like, I don't see you, I guess, kind of doing that. So, like, I'm sure there's been many times, or maybe not many times, but there's been times you've been confronted about your beliefs because of people, you know, reading one thing or seeing one thing and being like, oh, well, I like your music, but I, you know, I hate you as a person because of what you believe, or whatever. You know, how have you kind of navigated that, you know, people throwing stones at you from that, I guess, the political perspective?
Yeah, it's interesting sometimes, like, I do get some of that, like, people write me kind of angry letters, or they come up to me after a show and tell me that they don't, you know, agree with something I said on stage, which is not that common. I don't talk much on stage, but, I do feel like one of the things I really like about the time we live in right now, there's not many things, but one of the good things, I think, is that people's politics have been forced to the surface, I think, of their lives, where there's no getting away from it. And I feel like it's now sort of a really accepted thing that an artist who kind of doesn't make overtly political art will still be political, will still have a politics, right? So I feel really kind of comfortable in that, you know, being a writer who's not always overt about my beliefs, but I do, again, I feel like there's a template there that is sort of traced onto everything that I write, that the politics are there somewhere, but sometimes they're sort of tucked away. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like nowadays that's kind of common, and it's kind of cool.
Yeah, no, for sure, because I think it's a... especially when you're talking about stylistically, the music that you've, you know, created for a while, like, people don't automatically assume that there's going to be a political undertone in, you know, the quiet, you know, acoustic indie rock or whatever. It's like most people, you know, view that as like, oh yeah, you're going to be an aggressive rock band, so of course you're going to say something negative about, you know, capitalism or politics or whatever. And so, yeah.
And it's also just about, like, you know, what people are able to write. Like, I'm just not able to write as directly as maybe I'd like sometimes. You know, that's not, yeah, it requires a, you know, it requires a tapestry. It requires, like, all different kinds of art to move and change the world, you know?
Yeah. And approaches too. It's like, you know, there are, if you're looking at weapons, like, of course there's a blunt hammer and then there's a sniper rifle and, you know, all the things that, that people unfortunately use against one another.
Sure. Yeah. Exactly.
Poor metaphor for this conversation, but the last thing I want to hit on was the fact that, you know, you've clearly, a lot of people, you know, really attach themselves to, your lyrics and the way that you, you know, describe, you know, the scenarios that you lay out in the songs and everything like that. And, you know, like you mentioned before, you fancy yourself a writer and you've crafted your art towards that as well. And I know people have been like, oh, so, like, when are you going to put out a book? Like, when are you going to do, you know, a collection of short stories and that sort of stuff? I presume that your response is still just like that. I don't have the attention span for that, or I don't have the,
No, I don't. Yeah, no, I love books. Like, that's what I've always wanted to be, is a book writer, but I do not. I am not able to do that. I recognize now. I'm 45. It's I can write like 500 words, and that's, you know, 500 to 1,000 words is like anything more than that. And I'm fine with that. Like, I found a form that I can work with. I think songwriting is super democratic and available and I love it. So I feel like songwriting is sort of where all of that goes.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. But also, I would challenge you, John, because I think that you are very self-defecating, but that's not even a word. You tend to maybe sell yourself a little bit short in certain respects of your life. So I think you might be able to pull something together, whether it's just some musings, some things that you could probably be like
musings.
Yeah, a little zine, you could probably do something like that.
Well, I mean, zine culture is like where I like, that was the kind of, that's another thing that I really loved about the punk scene was kind of zines. I loved that. That was, and I still do, like I still make little pamphlets for, for my friends and family. I make them on my printer here and my community, and it's fun. Yeah, no, I totally see that, but I feel like I think what I present to the world is songs. Yeah, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, you're like I know my vehicle, and I'm going to stay in it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, John, I really honestly appreciate you hanging out with me, because I know this is, like I said, not something you typically do. But yeah, I really appreciate it.
I super enjoyed it. Thank you. Thank you for your persistence and your
yeah, exactly.
Your excellent, excellent conversation. Yeah.
Yes, that was Mr. Samson. Thank you very much. It was funny because at the very, like before we started recording, I could tell he was kind of nervous, and like, because he just doesn't do this sort of stuff often. Like, I didn't ask him, but I don't get the impression that he's done like a ton of podcasts, partially too because I was doing a ton of deep dive research on him, and there isn't a ton of stuff around about him from that perspective. So anyways, an eternal, eternal thank you for John for coming on this show and trusting me with making sure that we had a enjoyable conversation. So thank you very much for that. An eternal thank you to Wiretap Records as well. Use their code 100 words for $15 off whatever they got in their store. So wiretaprecords.com, please check it out. And also rockabilia.com, that is PC Jabberjaw for 10% off of your order. Please do that, and you will be clothed in band merch. And what do we have next week? In my favorite way to transition from a folk singer songwriter, indie rockish guy. How about we talk to Manny Mustafi, or Money Mustafi? I think that's how you actually say it. From Race Trader. How about that? Right, Weaker Than's Waste Trader, Race Trader. Love it. Love the transition between the two. Anyways, that's what we got next week. I love you. I hope you are doing okay. It will get better. I promise you. Okay. Until then, please be safe, everybody.
You've been listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, jabberjawmedia.com.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.